you have to teach next generation. You have to tell your story. This is how we got here. This is what we have. This is what we did. This is what we sacrificed to get here. Just so that they understand that this stuff just didn't magically appear, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of clients fall into that false sense of security. Like, oh, my kids are grown now. Like, I don't need to redo my estate documents. And I say, well, that's precisely why you do need to. Now you have a better sense of who they are as adults, how they manage money.
Right.
So maybe look at your documents, see how your assets pass to them. And, you know, let's look at these milestone ages.
Welcome to a Wiser Retirement Podcast, where we believe the best financial advice should always be conflict-free. I'm your host, Casey Smith, guiding you to financial freedom. Today is my co-host, Missy Beach, hey. The world's best financial planner.
That's a little much, but hello, Casey.
Hi Missy. So we are coming off, we are recording this just off the end of Masters weekend. So we have, at least I do, my sunburnt arms and my yellow shirt. It was interesting Masters this year. Did you watch?
I watched some, yes.
I was on hole 12. I really thought that we were going to have a close Masters.
Really?
And it didn't happen.
No, it wasn't much of a battle. It was pretty defined.
It always seems to like change right there at 11, 12, and 13. Great weather. A little windy on Friday, but
big winds Friday.
But great weather. It was I feel like that summer can come now.
That was like the intro.
That's the intro. Is I think
let it happen.
Is going to Augusta.
All right. Well, hopefully the pollen will go away now, and we can usher summer in.
Yes. I took some allergy meds because every year I come home, and then next Monday I'm like sick because
really?
I'm not outside Augusta that much. Pollen.
You should get out more.
I know. I probably should, mm-hmm. but I don't like all the pollen. It's not the pollen you see is the problem. It's the pollen before the pollen you see. Before you see yellow, I think that's when it gets really bad.
Sneaky pollen. Watch right. out.
All right. So let's get started. We're going to talk about how to have a wealth preservation plan today. And I think we have some really good points for our listeners. It's so much of what we talk about is building wealth. Mm-hmm. But yet what we really do is preserve wealth as help people preserve wealth as planners.
Absolutely. Why build it if you're not going to keep it?
and most people don't come to a wealth management firm. They don't have anything, right?
Exactly.
So, so I'll actually talk a little bit about what we actually do in a lot of our planning meetings. Obviously the most important step, number one, is to create a financial plan to protect family wealth, right? I mean, you got to have a plan.
Must be intentional.
Yes, correct, which is the whole theme of this podcast, which is, I assume, why you mentioned that, Missy. Mm-hmm. But you have to have a financial plan put together, which is why every one of our clients has a financial plan, and we update that. We spend more time on the planning than we probably do in asset performance reviews.
Oh, yeah, but, absolutely.
The planning part is very important. So a financial plan is made up of a lot of different things. It's not just assets. And this is where I get so frustrated with our industry, in that people think they have a financial plan, and clients will come to our firm and they say, I already have a plan. Here it is. And I'm like, this is just a really expensive time value of money calculation. There's really no planning done here other than, yeah, congratulations, you have enough money to provide income for yourself. But that's literally all they did.
Yeah. Is that enough income for how long?
Yeah. Was inflation taken into account? I mean, you have so many questions that go with that. And so frustrating for consumers is the fact that a lot of them have some of the same software that we have. They just don't know how to use it.
It's scary.
Isn't that crazy? Uh-huh. I mean, I've literally have had people come to me, hand me a piece of paper that's clearly the software that we use from another advisor. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, this is crazy. And then we use the exact same tool and give them a totally different picture.
That's the scary thing about calculators. You can have anything you want to come out of it.
Yeah.
Or you can manipulate any result.
It's just a tool.
Mm-hmm.
If I went out and had to start digging ditches, it'd be going very slow. Mm-hmm. but if a person who digs ditches every single day
yeah,
use that exact same tool, mm-hmm. there'd be a totally different result, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And so there's no difference in that and in financial tools that we use.
Oh, true. Well, think about it. If you go online with your 401k calculator to get, you can manipulate that thing and be like, oh yeah, I'm fine right. for retirement. Sure.
Using a 12% rate of return.
Yeah, exactly. You just manipulate it till yeah. you get the outcome that you want and go on with your day feeling, oh, I'm fine. So that's the danger.
So it's important to start with a complete plan and understanding what do you need for retirement and what is excess. So the excess is really generational wealth that you're building. And it might mm-hmm. start off small, but by the time you get 20, 25, 30 years into retirement, that excess could be much bigger. And so it's very important. We talk a lot about legacy planning in our yes. prior podcast, but it's very important that you do things to preserve that that wealth. So that kind of breaks us down to number two, which is saving for emergencies and large purchases.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the biggest thing to start with after you've paid off all debt, because that's one thing that we didn't mention and we're just assuming is taken care of in this situation. So once you've paid off all your debt, yes, then we go into the emergency savings. And so really 3 to 6 months of core living expenses, like no extravagant travel, clothing purchases, going out to eat, just your core living expenses.
Right.
Sock away in a cash account that's actually earning interest now. So I think if you're a wiser client, word's gotten out that that needs to be an online high yield savings account.
And the reason why you do that is if you were in a situation where you needed money, you never want to have to go to A, your retirement accounts, if you're not retired no. yet, to your brokerage account.
Yeah.
So what if you've lost your job or kind of going through a hard time at the exact same time that there's a big financial sell-off? Not maybe not as bad as 08, but maybe just like 2022. Mm-hmm. You're now being forced to liquidate money, possibly at losses, which you'll never recoup. And so that's where it's important to have cash reserves. And the good news is the cash reserves, you get paid for it now.
Exactly.
So you should be getting 4 to 5%, 5.5% in some cases on your cash. And I think this is a pretty common question. A lot of people ask in our planning meetings, how much should they keep in their local bank? And I typically tell them 20 to 30,000. Mm-hmm. If they have to have 100,000 in reserve, 20 to 30 might be at the local bank, not earning much, but you can get to it instantly.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Your online savings account's going to be a couple days away in terms of a transfer back to your local account.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind. So you don't want to leave yourself cash poor if you Correct. Need it today.
So, and then some people tend to get too much money in their cash accounts.
I know.
And so this is where you have to have you have to know what your big expenses are coming up. So if there's a car purchase coming up, then yes, you're letting that cash drift higher to either pay cash for the car or put down more money on the car,
Absolutely.
Right? So you have a lower payment. If you know that there's a roof coming or HVAC, you know, the big life ticket items, those are all things that, that you would allow cash to build from. So an example would be, for most clients, $50,000 in savings is enough. And for $100,000, anything over $100,000, we put that into what we call opportunity money.
Yeah.
Money that's not necessarily for retirement, but it's money that you have in excess that could be in the market. It's not going to be spending it in the next 5 years, that kind of thing. And some families are different. Some families are between $200,000 and $300,000 in cash for a good reason. Some families are between $10,000 and $50,000.
You know, yeah,
it depends on what stage of life that you're in.
Yeah, your annual living expenses, how many drivers you have in the house, and how many car purchases you have on the horizon.
Right.
How much you're going to spend in remodeling, you know, your backyard, when your appliances are going to burn out. I mean, yeah, you know how much you have in the pipeline.
Correct.
So, but the biggest mistake people are falling into this day and age is cash is paying interest. And so they think, oh, I'm just going to hoard some cash now. But you're really losing purchasing power by hoarding cash instead of putting it in the market if you really don't need it right now.
Correct.
So don't fall into that falsehood.
Yeah. There's a, that or paying down debt.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. You had a great point in one of our planning sessions yesterday that people are they have 3.5% mortgages. They have enough money in savings to pay off the mortgage, but they think they're making more money on their 5% money market.
Yeah.
But they're not.
After tax, they're
after
not.
After tax, yeah. So a lot of these people are in the highest tax bracket. If you're paying 37% tax on the income from a 5% yield, you are actually losing money versus a 3.5% mortgage.
I know. Yeah. So think about it.
A lot of times it's better to just pay off the
debt. Bite the bullet and pay it off.
Right. So anyway, that's important to protecting family wealth, having cash reserves so you don't have to go selling your real estate or your portfolios, things of that nature. Other thing is diversifying your portfolio. I got asked to have a lunch with a gentleman at our club. This has probably been a year or two ago. And nice young man, worked hard, corporate America, finally got in a nice corner office, we'll say, and was making good income, came from nothing really, and how he put it, and invested a bunch of money into the QQQ invert or a leverage fund. So basically it was like 3x NASDAQ, right? So he'd gone from like $3 million in a brokerage account down to $2 million and was really nervous. This was in 22.
Oh yeah. The big down year.
The big down year.
Leverage fund.
And basically I said, well, you didn't know better, but leverage funds are very volatile. And so what I would do is take this out and invest in a normal investment portfolio at this point.
Diversification.
Yeah. You need to diversify the holdings. And because he literally had everything in this one fund. Now that good news is that one fund owns a bunch of individual securities from the NASDAQ, but it's borrowed money at this point. So what gets you to where you are. So a better example might be people who buy individual stocks. The new one would be NVIDIA. So NVIDIA has done very well. And if I think it's time, not because it's at a all-time high necessarily, but and not because it won't go higher, but because this got you here, you created wealth. If it falls apart for some reason, then you're just right back to where you started. Why not take some of the gains off the table?
Yes.
Diversify that into the overall market, like the S&P 500. I'm not saying go to cash or go to bonds even, but just keep it in a diversified portfolio. So what got you here may not be the same strategy that needs.
Oh yeah.
That you need to have to continue. So, and then diversifying a portfolio could also mean not having less in stocks and bonds.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's better to have a third of your money or a third of your wealth in real estate. It doesn't have to be rentals. It could be second or third properties, but just diversify your holdings.
Yes, but I would say that's more at higher net worth levels.
Yes, if you have $10 million and you're living on $150,000 a year, $200,000 a year, you probably don't need to have 100% of that in stocks and bonds.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're like the million, $2 million net worth, really
no, that would make sense.
Healthy long-term asset classes are your best bet.
Yeah, the real estate part wouldn't make sense because now you're going to have a loan.
Yeah.
And so you're not really, not that the loan's bad, but you could have some things cramp your style if you don't something rent it out for some reason, and you're stuck with that mortgage and you have to cover that mortgage.
Yeah.
I use a little more hesitation there. It used to be you could buy a nice little beach condo for $200,000-$300,000, but those are kind of few and far between now. Or I mean, you wouldn't want that one maybe.
No.
Although I think there's some areas that prices are coming back down to that.
Another area of diversification where we're helping a lot of clients recently is concentrated company positions, because a lot of companies are into the restricted stock grants, which vest on an annual basis. And so we try to tell our clients, like, you're already invested so heavily in your company. They're paying your salary, mm-hmm. all your benefits, your medical insurance, matching your 401k, some group term, you name it. You're getting so much from this company. You don't want to double down and now hold shares in that same company. You know, right. granted, sometimes there's holding requirements that you must maintain, but if you can get out of your company stock, it's time to get out of your company stock and thank them for that award, but then move that to a diversified holding.
Right. We've used those awards over the years to pay off a lot of houses. Mm-hmm.
Tuition is another great annual use for it for private school or college.
I see that applies to everybody except our SpaceX clients.
Right.
I wouldn't be selling that at all.
We do have one.
I would not be selling SpaceX. I'd be holding that. Nothing but up there. Mm-hmm. Plus, that's private, so it's a lot harder to liquidate.
Yeah, good point.
It's not on the open market.
Are you curious why annuities keep coming up as a potential investment option? People are often told that annuities can effectively mitigate investment risks and help secure their financial future. However, annuities often benefit the salesperson and might not be the best choice for you as a consumer. To learn more about the various types of annuities, the negatives of owning them, and better investment alternatives, we have a free ebook on our website just for you. To download our ebook, Buyer Beware, Why Do They Keep Trying to Sell You That Annuity?, simply click the link in the episode notes or visit wiserinvestor.com/guides. Now let's get back to the episode.
But yes, and there's actually ways we're doing this now with direct indexing where we can take that individual position. If it's in a brokerage account, and we can add cash to it from the client, obviously has to have additional cash or things we can liquidate to cash. And then we can move that into a custom index built around it. So for instance, the largest holding in the S&P would be Apple. So if you had a lot of Apple stock, you would just build a custom index without Apple stock in it. So now you get a diversified portfolio. You're not doubling up on Apple inside the ETF. Mm-hmm. So that's a big game changer. And then you can do tax loss harvesting at more like a micro level, which allows you to sell off some of that Apple for no capital gains over time.
Exactly.
Maybe about 6% of it a year or so.
Yeah. Oh, it takes time.
It takes time to do all that. But those are all things that, I guess as part tax strategy for wealthy people to help preserve wealth and not have to pay the income tax.
Exactly.
Just have to have patience with the process.
You're going to need it down the road. So might as well mitigate those long-term capital gains.
And if you have a tremendous amount in a position, you can also buy puts. So you could take a option strategy, not the ones you see at midnight on CNBC advertising, some crazy strategy, but you would just buy insurance basically. So if it drops below this price, then you can eliminate it. Mm-hmm. We did that with a company that had, or a family that had a lot of Boeing stock. So after the second MAX crash, we were like, something's not right to lose two airplanes that close to each other.
Oh.
And the investigations weren't even done on the first one yet. And I think we were able to sell Boeing at $380 a share a year later when it was trading around 180 because of the put.
Yeah. So a put is your right to sell a share
at a certain price.
Yeah.
So you're buying it. It's like buying an insurance policy on a stock.
Smart.
Which helped protect their wealth. If it had gone to zero, they'd probably been okay, but it still protected their wealth. We've done it with Home Depot with a few clients. Less worry about that one, but the puts were a little cheaper because the market wasn't worried about it either.
Yeah, exactly.
But those are strategies you can look at to help preserve that position. We did it with Apple a really long time ago for a gentleman who's now passed away, but he needed that money in order to pay for nursing home.
And so
if Apple had just fallen apart, his livelihood or his well-being would have been at risk. So unfortunately, his ability to pay the premium was very small.
Oh, okay.
So we end up having to sell a call on the other side.
Yeah. Okay. But
it was, so I said it like 30% higher, but it got called away. It went up by 30% in a 6 month time span. This is a long time ago, but it got called away. But the fact that it got called away, there was enough premium there that it covered the tax bill and all that. So there's lots of advanced strategies you can be using to help mitigate the risk of individual securities.
I'm just kind of anchoring on the Boeing put. Like, how expensive do you think Boeing puts are in this right now?
Oh, I know. I haven't looked in a while because we don't have anybody else in that position. But yes. Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
They just keep having things pop up, it seems like, or pop out.
As long as it's not people out of planes.
Yeah, that'd be different. Yeah. Boeing might become something else at that point, at this stage. Another way to protect family wealth is insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone goes, ugh, insurance, right? It's funny because when I was researching this topic to see what else is out there, annuities kept popping up. And I will say, this is my disclosure, that annuities are not good wealth vehicles.
No.
When those gains are passed to the next generation, they're fully taxable as income. You don't get a step up in basis. It does allow you to never make money again. Meaning, because the salespeople who sell them like to say, you know, you're guaranteed, you know, whatever. And I was like, well, you're guaranteed never to make money. That's what it tells me.
You're just capped.
There are some ancient products or ancient annuities that we've seen pass through here that you can't buy anymore that really weren't that bad.
No, that are like 25, 30 years old.
But that was really a long time ago. And if they had put the money in the S&P 500, they still would have done way better.
Yeah.
But they weren't, for what it is, I would say that they weren't worse off necessarily.
No. And they usually have expensive riders that clients have bought on them. So it's like the, you know, confluence of all these factors that make these things good.
Even the insurance company realized it was a little too good of a deal. So they don't even offer those anymore. Yeah. So if you have one, it should be analyzed to say, this is a good idea, not a good idea to keep this. But as far as our discussion today with wealth preservation, a lot of it has, you know, life insurance serves a purpose. It replaces income.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're still in your wealth building phase and you want to make sure that the family gets to the finish line, life insurance is a way to make sure that that happens. Whole life insurance is a permanent policy, so it doesn't expire at a certain age. A whole life can be used at times to help preserve wealth. For example, if you have a special needs child and you want to be able to live your best retired life, but also know that there's X amount of dollars for this person that you might still be caring for as an adult, then that sometimes is a good strategy if you have the resources to purchase the policy, because it won't be cheap.
Correct.
But it could give you the peace of mind that you're looking for. Whole life also could be used to cover estate taxes,
which we could be getting back into. Who knows?
We'll find out about what?
Year and a half?
Yeah.
I mean, they'll sunset in a year and a half, so we'll see.
Really depends on how the next election goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we wouldn't get past the 2-year mark before it sunsets again.
Correct.
Yeah, so it really depends on who's in power this next election cycle. So on 12, what we're talking about is 12/31/25, we revert back to the 2016 tax brackets.
Yes.
Which I think are about 5 to 8% higher than where you are now, pretty much across the board for the most part.
Yeah. Well, at the top, 37% goes up to 39.6
is it? Yeah. But the mid and the bottom,
those get crushed kind of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's wrong.
I know, isn't it? Especially with all this inflation. So you would think that they would modify it to at least where the bottom stays where it is.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the right thing to do.
And just increase the top.
But my part of me thinks that they're going to fight so much about it that it will revert back to the original.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. They'll fight. That's a given.
Yeah, true. So investing in insurance, I hate that phrase, but purchasing insurance, we'll say.
Yeah.
Could be an opportunity to help preserve things, but you never should talk to the insurance salesperson about it. You should be talking to an independent advisor who does not sell the product to see if this would make sense. Then you go to the person who sells it to make to make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
A broker who sells multiple carriers.
Yes, correct. Don't buy something that has the same name of the company in the insurance.
Ding, ding, ding.
Be tax smart to preserve wealth. Okay, so we already touched on this a little bit, where if you have wealth inside a brokerage account, you really should be looking at transitioning into direct indexing now, because you have the opportunity to create your own tax credits and also build your own indexes. So we have whole podcasts that we can reference on that in the show notes. But the important part is understanding that you can use the capital gains or capital losses to your benefit to reduce your taxes. Other one too is looking down the road at Roth conversion. So we're starting to do this for wealthier clients, knowing what's coming up with some potential tax changes. But if you have family members that are going to be in a higher tax bracket once you pass away, then your tax bill, it might be better to pay your tax bill now.
Mm-hmm.
Also too, you have to remember, if you have millions of dollars inside an IRA, the first year you take an RMD, which would be 73 or age 75, depending on your birth year, you're paying probably about 3.5% that first year of what the balance is as your required minimum distribution. But if you forecast out, you go out 15 years, that 3.5% is like, what, 5? It's a big number.
Oh, yeah.
Down the road, because every year that number grows. So what we like to do in our tax planning is we'll look at where you start and then where do you finish up in your 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be you go from a 24 to a 37 or 35% bracket. So maybe it's better to convert some now at 22 to 24 so that you can pay less later.
Absolutely. And you know, Casey, another time where it makes really good sense to do this is if you have a couple with a big age difference. And so the one spouse might die, you know, a decade or a decade and a half before the second spouse. So when the second spouse inherits that IRA, she or he's going to be taxed at single tax rate. So that vaults it up. That RMD is now like at the 37% tax rate.
Right.
So getting more out of the IRA earlier with a Roth conversion just makes even more sense with that big age gap.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Also, too, is charitable giving strategy. A lot of people are still giving to their churches and other organizations out of their checkbook after they hit the RMD age, right? And you can even do it before then, 70 and a half, you can still do charitable contributions. But think about this. If you're required to pull $30,000 out of your IRA mm-hmm. every year, you give $20,000 to a charitable organization every year or multiple organizations, you could give it out of your IRA instead. It wouldn't count as taxable income.
No tax.
So you're saving, but so you
ordinary end up, tax.
Right. So you end up with the same amount of money in the end because you're not writing it out of your checkbook. And you don't get the deduction on the tax return. It's just that the money never came to you, so mm-hmm. it didn't get taxed. So if you're in the 37% bracket, that's saving 37%. So it requires some paperwork. So this is something that you would not do on a monthly basis, but maybe a couple times a year, one time a year is what we prefer.
Yeah, because it has to be the first money that comes out of the IRA each year.
Correct.
Like you can't take a monthly to your own account and then do the charitable. You've got to do the charitable first.
Right. Well, if you do it the way you're talking about, what's the negative consequences of that? Because if you give it first, you're still going to pay the income tax and then it's just the end, right?
Right. But technically, I think the QCD, qualified charitable distribution, has to be the first money out each year.
Okay.
IRS code.
I wonder how they police that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like when you miss your RMD, I've always wondered how they police missing an RMD.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they do somehow. Big Brother's watching.
Yeah.
Interesting. So yes, also where you're saving. So it could be that it's better to put money more into Roth than it is to pre-tax. But I would say it's all family dependent. Mm-hmm. Every family has a little different strategies. I wouldn't say that there's any one piece of advice I could give all of our listeners, it would apply to all of them.
True. Another strategy is if you're not 70 and a half yet, and so you can't give money from your IRA to get money out of there, you can give appreciated securities.
Yep, that's correct. That Apple stock we were talking about, you could always give that.
And so that way you get to give the full market value of your Apple stock and get right. the full tax deduction for that market value. And then you don't have to pay the capital gains on that. And the charity gets the full value. So it's a win-win.
Yep.
So we have to let everybody know, never be giving cash. You always have an appreciated security or yeah. something in your IRA. So think twice before you're ever writing a check or yeah. swiping your card to give to a charity.
Another angle too on this is just forecasting out your income and where you're pulling money from. Because most brokers just say, you know, we're going to send you X amount of dollars, but they say, talk to your tax person. They're mm-hmm. not actually doing any tax planning. So you have to do some tax planning as far as your wealth preservation strategy to understand where you're pulling money from. Another thing I thought about too is second homes. Mm. Some people, you have to pay capital gains tax on the sale of those.
Yeah.
And occasionally I run into people who've sold a home and bought another second home, and they had to pay capital gains tax on the first home. Mm. And all they had to do was a 1035 exchange.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah. you could 1031.
Sell,
or I'm sorry. Yes. Thank yeah, you. 1031 uh-huh. exchange. So you could have done an exchange and from like kind.
Yep.
And be able to purchase
the next
home and roll the capital gains into that home. There's a process for that.
Right.
So you
in a limited time frame.
In a limited time frame, yes. But there's companies who specialize mm-hmm. in that. Another one too is the sale of a business. So you're selling your business, assuming that you're not selling the stock of the company. So sometimes people are, mm-hmm. but most of the time you're selling the assets and the company yeah. just kind of disappears. If that were to happen, you have the opportunity to use that money to purchase a home.
Uh-huh.
Right. So you could buy an investment property that you're using as your second home. Maybe it's on the Airbnb rental mm-hmm. enough to qualify for that, but you could do a 1031 exchange from your business sale to buy a property. So if you're selling your business for $30 million, you could pick up a $4 million beach house, right? Mm-hmm. And not have to pay tax on the $4 million. Because usually the people who are buying you want you to roll up. They want mm-hmm. you to reinvest in their company going forward. And sometimes it's required and sometimes it's not. Now, if you're selling stock, you can't quite pull that off.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be like
cash,
like kind.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So there's lots of tax strategies, all of which are very legal and all require some forethought.
Oh, yeah.
It's not something that you're in the middle of doing this.
The transaction.
And now you need to do it. You need to be thinking about this a good 6 months to a year before you even take any action with a business sale, maybe 2 years mm-hmm. Before. Estate planning. So this is also very important in how you transition your assets to the next generation. Oh. And I can't help but think about, you know, all of our episodes on legacy planning, but you have to teach next generation. You have to tell your story. This is how we got here. This is what we have. This is what we did. This is what we sacrificed to get here. Just so that they understand that this stuff just didn't magically appear. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of clients fall into that false sense of security. Like, oh, my kids are grown now. Like, I don't need to redo my estate documents. And I say, well, that's precisely why you do need to. Now you have a better sense of who they are as adults, how they manage money.
Right.
So maybe look at your documents, see how your assets pass to them. And, you know, let's look at these milestone ages. Like, oh, you know, like 2 out of 3 of your kids have already blown by all the milestone ages. They're going to get all your millions outright. Is that a good thing? And they're like, well, yeah, maybe not.
Yeah.
So you have to readdress all these things.
Yeah. And then probably review those documents every few years. Also, if you move, you need to redo the will, power of attorney, medical directive for the state that you actually live in. If you're spending a lot of time out of state, you should have documents for both.
That's a good point.
Not a will, but the power of attorney, medical directive for both states should be in place. And then if your estate is more complicated, meaning that you have rental properties, second, third homes, at some point, someone needs to map that out and say, this home is in this LLC. If something happens to me, what happens to the LLC?
Yeah.
Does the LLC go through probate, or have you in the bylaws, have you created a process for the member dying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things that can get really complicated, but they need to be laid out, because most of these estate planning attorneys are just working through creating documents. I don't know how much advice they're actually giving.
Yeah. Like how it all coordinates together.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
You're young, in their 20s, just had a baby. It's easy. You can go and find an attorney who just does these things every day, just cranks them out. But sometimes you need the attorney that costs a little more money, who's pausing and talking you through the process or listening to you. That's part of our jobs as quarterbacks for the family, as advisors, is to make sure that all the other professionals are doing what they're supposed to be doing. But sometimes I have to take my whiteboard in my office and I just have to draw it all out.
Yeah.
And then you see the holes and you go, oh, and then you call the attorney and go, hey, what are we gonna do about this?
Yeah.
And it's just, I didn't even realize it.
No. Yeah. We have to tell the clients, these are the things to be thinking about before you go meet with the attorney. So try to get the brains going and think of all the people that you're going to name. Think about the things that the attorney's going to present you with to decide upon.
You know, I as we kind of wrap up here, I have a great book, which we'll link in our show notes, but it's called The Psychology of Money. It's by Morgan Housel. He's become a famous writer in our space. But he had an interview, or he quotes an interview from Charlie and Warren Buffett, and kind of came up with these survival mindsets. Real world outcomes really come down to these three things. I'll just read the first one. You can buy the book and read the other two. But one is, this is, more than I want big returns, I want to be financially unbreakable. If I'm unbreakable, I actually think I'll get the biggest returns, because I'll be able to stick around long enough for compounding to work wonders. So that to me, it kind of summarizes up how do you protect wealth, is that you have a good segment of your estate that is secure, and you know that you never have to tap into these other resources.
Yes.
And then it allows all these other resources to grow and flourish. Right. And then, as you know, some people have a lot more money and they will use a bit of leverage to in parts of their portfolio to be able to do other things. It could be real estate, could be, no one that I know is borrowing money to invest. I don't know anybody actually does that.
No.
Other than complete fools.
Other than those.
But real estate's a common example of that, especially income generating real estate. So just understand that what got you here, then there's a whole nother level that takes you to the next, you know, a whole nother steps to take you to the next level. And how you got here is maybe not the same way as you keep growing your wealth.
Right.
And there's a different things that you can do. Whole life insurance and annuities are not going to be your first stop.
No.
But maybe there's some case for insurance possibly. But I think more importantly, it's just understanding this is my monthly need. This is how I'm going to secure my monthly need. This is my backup plan, my emergency reserve, and then everything else can grow and compound and build legacy for the next generation.
Absolutely.
All right, Missy, great conversation. Thanks for talking.
Thanks, Casey.
You can learn more about these topics. Episode 145, Dying Without an Estate Plan. Do You Hate Your Family? That was the one I think I did with Brad a while ago. Passing Down Generational Wealth, episode 175. That's a really good episode too. Videos reference. We have a YouTube channel. Hey, we hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube.
Woo!
On our last podcast, I think I said, hey, like and subscribe. And people did. So thanks for doing that. Past the 1,000 mark. That's big for a little firm like ours.
Heck yeah. Tell your friends.
That's right. So we also on A Wiser Retirement on the YouTube channel, we have a couple of short videos, Prevent Family Conflict with Legacy Planning Using an Outline, or I'm sorry, Online Estate Planning Service versus Local Attorney, and Meaningful Ways to Leave a Financial Legacy to Your Heirs. Those are all things that are in the show notes. This is episode 219. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to A Wiser Retirement Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. That way you don't miss any new episodes. We'd also appreciate if you could leave a rating and review. If you have any questions about anything that was discussed today, head to wiserinvestor.com and reach out.
This episode was produced by Edward Resendez.
This podcast is strictly for informational purposes only and is not to be considered as investment advice or a solicitation to buy or sell any financial products, securities, digital assets, or any other investment vehicles, or a basis to make any financial decisions. Wiser Wealth Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. The host and or guest may personally own securities, digital assets, or other investment vehicles mentioned on this podcast. Neither the host nor guest of the show are compensated for their participation, and no referral fees are paid to or received by any host or guest for clients, listeners, or similar interests. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor, tax professional, insurance professional, and or legal professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.